Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And there we have it, an effortless counter four, so I don't have to edit this afterwards. A welcome to a very special Legacy Life Reflections episode of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius. Legacy Life Reflections is normally about gifting an episode of the show to someone near, dear, or close to you in order to record their story for posterity. But what's really lovely about today's context, we are here to record the story of a wonderful double act for posterity. This is the wonderful world of Laurel and Hardy. Stan Laurel is my all-time comic hero, and when I met Patrick Vasey recently at the Slapstick Festival here in Bristol, where also the Good Listening To Show has been part of that too, I couldn't believe my luck, because Patrick Vasey, Laurel and Hardy magazine author, the Laurel and Hardy podcast creator and curator, with your double act partner Russ Babbage, you're extremely welcome to the Good Listening To Show.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. It's lovely to be here and on the other end of the meeting.
For a change.
For a change, yes. Feels very strange. Very
lovely.
Strange.
So you're a super fan of your own volition, as am I. You know, Stan Laurel, I first came across him when I was 7 years old living in Uganda. That for so many people, there's sort of a DNA in their childhood that then almost defines it.
I didn't know Stan Laurel lived in Uganda. That's incredible. That's something I'll make their note of that.
See what you did there. So it was a black and white TV set that hummed into action circa probably about 1965. If only I'd known, that would have been before his death. But, you know, there we were. Yeah. So, Patrick Vasey, how's morale? What's your story of the day, please?
Well, my story of the day is I'm sitting here with you, Chris. So this is it's a real treat. Yeah, it's a real treat. And I love the opportunity to talk about Laurel and Hardy any time of the day. So, this is the story of the day for me, without question. So morale is good. Morale is good. We're in a good spirit.
And the story behind your story of how you got into the world of Laurel and Hardy, that's one of your publications as well. You've got a book called Laurel and Hardy Silence, I believe, is the title, coming up soon as well.
It's forthcoming. It's been forthcoming for about 2 years, so it seems to be inevitably always forthcoming. But we are pushing for this year. It has to be this year. I've got to get this monkey off my back.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a wonderful book. What I'm trying to achieve is to bring together as much of the magic of Laurel and Hardy's silent shorts as possible. There's not a lot of people don't realize that Laurel and Hardy made silent films, because we know them all from the talkies and the "that's another nice mess," you know, all these little catchphrases.
Yes.
But they made about 34 silent shorts, and I'm trying to bring together all of the information and really narrate their careers from the first meeting, 1921, right through to where they make the transition to talking pictures. And I want to bring together all the lobby cards and all the stills that are available, because we see one or two in books, but we don't see them all. And I want to have everything all under one roof, as it were. So,
really, and your cut and thrust, which is really lovely, is you're doing it all chronologically. So it's lovely. You've got the perfect construct, because you've got a story arc good to go in your structure.
Yeah, that's it. It just seemed the obvious way to do it for me, because there is a story there. The Laurel and Hardy story is fascinating. The way that they were sort of thrown together and they developed, it needs to be told chronologically, because it makes sense. And you can actually see, I think the beauty of Laurel and Hardy compared to other comedy teams, is that you can see the birth of that comedy team. Yes. You can see the development, and it moves through. You can see them grow right the way from cradle to grave, actually, because they stay together after films. Right up until their death. And even after Oliver Hardy died, Stan Laurel was still writing sketches for them, even though it was never going to happen, which is just a beautiful thing.
And what really caught my heart at the age of seven was the kindness, the humility, the innocence, and just the haplessness. And, you know, it still informs all the work that I do, because those are qualities that I like to transmit and connect to. So I'm right there with you. It's wonderful to meet another super fan. And in fact, you're trailing a blaze of glory in what you're doing, which is great.
Oh, let's hope so. I hope so. I'm trying to do my bit. If I can just contribute even a little bit to you know, continuing their legacy in some way, just keeping them in the public eye, because it's harder and harder to do that nowadays. I mean, the films are, you know, coming to 100 years old.
Yes.
And they're not on television anymore. I mean, television itself is kind of dying anyway. That's sort of how we knew television. So it's harder and harder. So I'm trying my best to keep them up there, because they mean so much to me and to a lot of us, I know.
And I'm a lovely friend of Chris Daniels, who runs the Slapstick Festival in Bristol. And of course, he's on a similar mission. Yes. To keep the legacy of all slapstick, all silence and yes. Talking, in just an era that's precious to us all. Yeah. County Hospital, I remember, was the first film I ever saw. Then I got incredibly enamoured by Bratz, where they're playing their own children.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, that's informed other work, even in my company, which is a comedy improvisation company called Instant Wit. Anyway, I'm very excited, and it's not about me, it's about you. So it's my great pleasure to curate you through the narrative storytelling journey of the Good Listening To show. There's going to be a clearing, a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. Right. So let's get you on the open road. So where is, what is a clearing for Patrick Vasey? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
Well, the open road is a good start, actually, because driving usually is where I get a lot of my ideas from. I don't get a lot of quiet time, to be honest. I don't tend to sit still very, very much. Whether I want to or not is beside the point. So usually I do quite a bit of commuting for my day job. So I listen to podcasts and audiobooks, and I get quite a bit of inspiration from that. Walking the dog is always a big one as well, when it's just me and the dog and the sound of the birds and, you know, just a bit of peace and quiet, and things just sort of come to you. Then when you're in that space to hear it, it comes, I think.
And what is your day job, if I may ask?
I work for a animal rescue charity, a local animal rescue charity. So it's kind of my job to make sure that charity is financially sustainable, and we rescue animals from cruelty and abuse and neglect. So, and then we find them new homes.
And what's the name of the charity?
It's the RSPCA. You may have heard of it. It's the RSPCA, but in the North Staffordshire, the little local branch.
Sure. And I know that obviously Stan Laurel was born in Ulverston in Lancashire. What's your geography attached to that?
I live in the Midlands. I live in Shropshire. So I'm probably a couple of hours away from Ulverston. I have been quite a few times, but yeah.
So we're in your clearing then, which you can choose. It's either I like driving in my car. It could be a Jaguar, yeah. But I'm enamored by walking the dog too. What's your dog's name as well?
My dog's name is Jigsaw. And we call her Jiggy for short. She's 14. She's stone deaf. You'll probably hear her shortly because she'll just announce herself, because she doesn't know who's around her. So I'll just bark at any given moment. So she may make an appearance. But I think we'll go for walking in North Devon by the sea. That's been usually the place of biggest creative inspiration.
Lovely.
I think when you're on holiday, you just forget everything else. And yes, you are able to just, it just flows from there. It's great.
And it's obviously a profound passion project for you, the Laurel & Hardy thing. It's where your soul obviously chimes.
Yes.
And I sincerely hope, and I hope this helps too, in helping you to monetize it even more through the wonderful work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And it's always been, I mean, you know, when I started working with Russell, we've always said it's not about trying to make money from it. Although that's always nice, you know, because equipment is not free and time is money, etc. But it's about that legacy of Laurel and Hardy is the key yes. thing for us. You know, if we feel that we are spreading the word and yes. we are doing something valuable, that's payment. That's what it's all about. It's just wonderful.
And I love the resonance of connecting to purpose, because, you know, what I'm on the open road doing here as well, is I'm a real advocate of the idea, if you tell your story out loud, you're much more likely to live it out loud. And yes. So there's something about the preciousness of preserving story, and, you know, for future generations too, which is why I'm contextualizing and wrapping this in Legacy Life Reflections. But what better legacy that Laurel and Hardy that we're here to discuss. Okay, so we're walking your dog then on the Devon seascape. Do you want to be specific about the, you don't literally have to put a ponytail in the map, but whereabouts on the Devon coast are we?
Oh, anywhere. Don't mind. I'm easy.
So we've gone feral with Jigsaw on the old Devon coast. Lovely. Okay, I'm now going to arrive with a tree in the clearing, which, because of my acting background, is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque and deliberately existential. And now I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. I've got a comedy apple somewhere. How do you like these apples? And this is where you've been kind enough to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, and then two things that never fail to grab your attention. And borrowed from the film Up, that's a bit more squirrels, you know, where the dog just can't fail but to dash after the squirrels. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Patrick Fazey, we couldn't know until you tell us. So over to you to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
Okay, so four things that have shaped me. I think the first thing, the obvious thing, and these are in no order of importance, I have to say. And the first thing is obviously family. I mean, from a child, I've realized, and I probably hadn't realized it until very recently, especially since being asked the question, my father has been a huge influence on shaping me, not even intentionally. I think it's just that sort of, just that influential figure. My sense of humor comes from my father, and that's a huge part of my life. My love of classic comedy of Laurel and Hardy came from my father. I used to sit watching him laughing at the screen, and then eventually I'd laugh along when I finally realized what it was, you know, that was going on. I love drawing cartoons. I've always wanted to be a cartoonist since I was a kid. And that came from watching my dad copying Disney cartoons from books. And even to the point of mannerisms now, I catch myself at times sitting in ways that I know my father sits, walking and the way that I talk. And yeah, so my father has been a huge...
He's still with us, if I may read between the lines, still with us, talking about him in the present tense.
Yes, he is still with us, yeah.
And how old is your dad?
70, I'm not good with ages. I can never remember how old I am. So 1948 he was born, I know that. So that's pretty good. So my father definitely is one, and another one is my wife has been a huge influence on me, and in a very good way, because I went to school with my wife, we were in high school together, and we started dating when we were sort of 17 18, and I'm now 48, so you know, we've been together a long time. But she, when we first started going out, she found me sort of, I'd left school at 16. I just wanted to be a cartoonist. So I didn't need maths, didn't need science, didn't need geography, didn't need anything like that.
Just needed a pencil.
needed a pencil and he needed to be good at drawing, you know?
Yeah.
So I really didn't concentrate at school, which I should have done. And I regret it. So I just got a job. I just worked in retail, found a job in a shop. I finished school on the Friday, went to work on the Monday, had no time off in between. And she made me realize that actually I had potential. I'd got intelligence. I'd got, you know, skills that I could use. And she really made me believe in myself. And she changed my life direction completely from a professional point of view. And obviously from a personal point of view, she's changed my life because, you know, we're married, we have two children, and she's, you know, my best friend. She's just so much a part of me is down to her. So I have to give that to her. Without
almost perfectly, you've got two kids as well. That's another double act right there.
I have my own Laurel and Hardy. Yes, without a doubt, they either love each other or hate each other in equal measure. So it's
and they're both boys.
They're both boys. Yes, yeah.
Are they Sam called? I doubt they're called Stan and Ollie, but they might be.
Sam and Teddy. No, close. It's close.
I've got a son called Stan because I've always wanted a son called Stan because of my love of Stan Laurel, and he's going to be 17 in about 3 weeks' time.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. No, they always make life interesting. And it's never dull. The third apple I will choose is, and they, to be honest, they don't deserve to be on this podcast, but I'm going to give it to them anyway, is former managers, horrible bosses. Having worked in private industry and had, you know, a number of different managers. Some of them were so vile and horrible. It really impacted on me. And I thought, I'm never, ever going to be like that. If I ever have to manage staff, which I have done and I still do, I will never do that. And that really did shape me. And so it was a negative thing for me at the time, but it was a positive thing in it, as an outcome.
And isn't that the wonderful thing in the leadership work that I do as well? We've learned so many powerful lessons from good instances of leadership, but how delicious that we learn even more seismic ones from instances of,
Definitely. Oh,
don't do that. Yeah.
Without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. So I will, I'll give them a mention. names. I've had some very good managers as well, I have to say, but there are some appalling ones.
And I like your instinct not to name them and shame them, but they're out there.
Well, you never know, do you? You never know. The final one has to be Laurel and Hardy. I mean, that my love for Laurel and Hardy has shaped me tremendously. Funnily enough, I did a podcast just a few days ago, and one of my guests, Richard Bann, he said that Laurel and Hardy script our lives. When things go wrong, you find yourself looking up at this invisible camera as if to say, oh, can you believe what I've just done? You know, there's nobody there, but you just, I don't know. There's so much of Laurel and Hardy's characters that they're inside you. Because they are.
That's the babe look to camera, Oliver Hardy, breaking the fourth wall to go,
That's it. Yeah, can you believe what I'm having to go through? Yeah, it's Laurel and Hardy have really shaped my sense of humor, my comedy passions, and also have introduced me to people like Russell. I mean, we're really good friends now. We did not know each other at all until about, what, three, four years ago or something like that. And you know, as you've mentioned before, prior to that, we'd grown up huge Laurel and Hardy super fans, but with nobody to share it with.
Yes.
And nobody to talk to, and nobody who would get those little comments that we make. You know, 'twas ever thus. Think, what are you talking about? Well, so it's been, we talk on a pretty much daily basis now. You know, we work very closely together. I mean, he lives down in Dorset and I'm in the middle of the country, so we rarely see each other.
There's the most famous of all Laurel and Hardy fan clubs, which is the Sons of the Desert. So I'm wondering if you flirted with them too.
Do you know, I didn't. I've never, there's a strange thing. Before I started doing the podcast, I wasn't connected to anybody at all to do with Laurel and Hardy World, whether Sons of the Desert. I've been to a couple of conventions, but I was never really part of an actual local tent.
Yes.
Which I kind of, I'm a little bit sad about, but actually... there's a lot of frivolity that happens, I think, at tent meetings and certainly at the conventions. And I mean, I don't drink and I don't kind of do the conga, and I'm not a big social I'm a social misfit to a large extent.
The cut of your jib is lovely because you're a super fan, but you don't seem geeky, which is lovely as well.
Well, I don't know. I probably am geeky in my own way. I don't know. Who knows?
Some of the best people say,
just look at these geeks here. Look at these geeks. And my wife says to me, so you're saying you're not a geek? I'm not a geek. I'm just a person with an interest.
That's the great way to calibrate that. Love that. Lovely.
Not that there's anything wrong with geeks. I do like, you've got to be a bit geeky at times.
Some of my best friends are geeks. I see what you're doing there.
Yes, absolutely right. Yes. Yeah.
Lovely shapages.
Yeah, Laurel and Hardy definitely have shaped me without a question. And
what's the first memory you have? What was the first film you saw that made you double take?
That's one of my questions I ask my guests. I dodge all those kind of questions. I can't remember the first film. My earliest memory is just sitting on the living room carpet with my dad and my sister, just laughing hilariously at a black and white television. That's my earliest memories. BBC Two, probably after school or something. There is a moment where I was sitting in high school, probably 14 years of age, in French class, thinking about Laurel and Hardy, because obviously I didn't need French because I was going to be a cartoonist. And just a realization that, oh, I bloody love Laurel and Hardy, and I don't know why, you know. And from that point, I then had to find out more about them as actors, as people, and how these beautiful films were made. So that was kind of the launch pad to all of what's come since.
And I was always very enamoured, similarly as a child, but also growing up, I got very enamoured in subsequent actor training that I did at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, that Babe Ruth grew up in a Texas hotel and used to people watch as a way of banking characters.
Oh, Babe Hardy, that. You mean?
Yes. Sorry, not Babe Ruth. Sorry.
Babe Ruth.
Sorry. I mean, Oliver Hardy, Babe.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
went down a different, I went down my own rabbit hole there. I've got a bell for rabbit holes. Cashier number three, please. So yes, but the idea of people watching, and as an actor should never be bored because there's also people, yeah, always people to watch.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, he's a fascinating character. I mean, Babe Hardy was probably a better actor than Stan Laurel. I think it's quite widely acknowledged. And I kind of feel like when you're young, you really are drawn to Stan Laurel because he is so childlike and
yes,
you can't help but fall in love with Stan. And Ollie is the sort of pompous, overbearing one that pushes him around. But as you get older, you then start to get drawn to Ollie because yes, he is the world weary. Oh my goodness, oh me, what have I got to put up with now? And you just, you, every time I watch him, I'm just amazed at how good Oliver, yes, Hardy was. Just so, so good.
He's the big bear protecting Stan in all of it as well.
He is. He's the parental figure. He is. Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Stan is very naive, childlike, otherworldly. And you have these little bits of white magic that happen at times, you know, the ice, yeah, cubes in the pockets and the salt cellars and things like,
yes,
that. And the thumb on fire.
On fire, light the pipe. Yes.
Yeah. But Ollie is that sort of parental figure. And as much as Stan is a frustration to him, he can't help but look after him, and yeah, it keeps on giving
because also there's the likes of James Finlayson with the doll, you know, the extraordinary, which informs so much modern comedy as well.
That's right.
The art of the double take, and
yeah,
anyway,
yeah. Oh, the extended world of the Laurel and Hardy films is just fabulous. The music, the supporting actors, the Hal Roach backlot. You could just go on and on and on. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
Now we're on to three things that inspire you. And if there's any overlap, that's okay.
There undoubtedly will be. Three things that inspire me. Other people inspire me, which is a very broad comment, I'm aware. But other creative people certainly inspire me. In terms of the podcast especially, I stumbled across podcasts, started listening to a few, but thought I need to find something that I'm really interested in. And I just happened across the Marx Brothers Council podcast. And I just thought, this is fantastic. This is exactly my people. This is it's people having a deep dive into classic films that I love. Very knowledgeable people talking about it who have a great camaraderie. And once I'd listened to them all, I thought, right, I need to listen to the Laurel and Hardy one. Looked for it, and it wasn't there. There wasn't.
Wow.
And I thought, well, that's not fair. What happens now? Who's going to do this? And I thought, well, I'll have to do it. If no one else is going to do it, I'll have to do it myself. I mean, I'd started writing a Laurel and Hardy blog in 2018, which was reasonably successful. So I had a little bit of a following. I thought, well, I could build on that. Mm-hmm. So I started with the Laurel and Hardy blog cast, which subsequently I've changed just to the Laurel and Hardy podcast because it was quite confusing to a lot of people. And it just kind of went from there. It was that inspiration from listening to the Marx Brothers one. There wasn't one for Laurel and Hardy, so just do it yourself. And I had to go from a point of knowing nothing about podcasts. I had no idea how to put a podcast together. And it's amazing how you can teach yourself through the internet. Like, I listen to podcasts about podcasting, YouTube videos. I bought a secondhand bit of equipment, this microphone, you know, from somebody locally who was just selling it on Facebook, and just learned as I went along. And it's just been a great, great ride.
That's classically pioneering of finding your niche and finding the gap, and then just thinking, oh, blimey, I'd better do it myself. And then you swim into the clearing yourself and get it done.
Yeah. I don't want to swim into the clearing, plunge in, just leap in. There comes a point when you think, right, I'm inspired to do this, but it's very public. Can I actually do this?
Yes.
And a lot of the advice is at some point you are just going to have to take the plunge. You're just going to have, yes, to jump in.
Yeah.
And so I did it. And I've never looked back, actually. And it's been wonderful. I was very lucky. The first guest that I had on the show on episode one was a guy named Rob Stone, and he wrote a book about Laurel and Hardy before Laurel and Hardy. So the solo films before they were a team. And the first film they were in together was a Stan Laurel solo comedy. Babe Hardy just happened to be, a supporting player in that. And I thought, well, I'm not an expert in Laurel and Hardy.
Was that Putting Pants on Philip?
The Lucky Dog. It was The Lucky Dog. Yeah, 1921. And I thought I'd love to speak to somebody who knows a lot about the solo films, and very little work had been done about the solo film. So I just reached out to Rob Stone on Facebook and said, would you come on this podcast I'm doing? And he said, yes, amazingly. Little did I realize just how well connected Rob Stone is in the film history world. Because he yes. works for the Library of Congress. His job is to look after and preserve old films and sort of conserve them and what have you. So everybody who's anybody knows Rob Stone and respect him. So because he was the first guest on the show, I think after that, everybody thought, well, if Rob's done it, that's fine. So
yeah.
Stroke of luck in that respect. And what's been lovely is the Laurel and Hardy fandom world, the experts, film historians, are so friendly,
yes,
sharing, giving, and it's just been an absolute blast to get to know these people. People that I just read their work when I was a kid, and yes. now I'm sort of speaking to them on a monthly basis, and just having a great time. I'm going on at length.
No,
you should ding your bell whenever you're ready.
What's meant for you won't pass you by. This is glorious, wonderful. Second Shapage now.
Second Shapage.
Sorry, I mean, Wibble, it's my...
Oh, yes.
it's the second inspiration.
Sort of researching cartoonists and animators has been a huge inspiration. I'm a very frustrated cartoonist inside because I haven't done it now for ages. And I know when I die, I will probably have the headstone, a frustrated cartoonist.
yes.
It's because it's one of those things that you know is part of you, but you just are not letting it out.
Yes.
And I haven't got time at the minute to let it out, really. Other than I doodle, you know, when I'm in a meeting or something.
I was going to ask if you're a doodler, because that's obviously...
Yeah, yeah. Always doodle. Funnily enough, when we were at the Slapstick Festival, I popped along to the Aardman Animation Studio and couldn't get in. I thought it might be some kind of visitor attraction, and I was gutted that I couldn't get in.
Peter Lord has been a previous guest.
I know, I listened. It was a great show. I really enjoyed that show. And I just so wanted to be in there and have a job in there. And it's just... It makes me very sad inside. I'm like a clown face crying inside. I can't be this. And I've never done animation. I've never even, you know, anything like that, you know, researching about Charles Schulz, creator of Snoopy and Peanuts, and Garfield, and all of this kind of stuff, Disney. I just love it. And it really...
I was going to mention, you've got a bit of a Walt Disney lock of hair, if I may say. So there is something about your animation. Or a sort of, you're a man born out of your time. There's sort of a Clark Gable head.
Oh, definitely. Somebody made a comment once on Facebook. I was at an event somewhere, and a comment was, "Who's this, Errol Flynn?"
You old swashbuckler.
I'll take that. Yes. Definitely born out of time, though, without a question. Yes. Third thing that's inspires me is, I think, just the nature, being in the outdoors. I always get a lot of inspiration and sucker from being in the outdoors. I used to do a lot of bird watching at one time, not twitching, not, you know, nothing nerdy and geeky like that. I'll step away from it, but just enjoying garden birds and going to the odd reserve and things, and just, learning bird calls and all kind of things.
Yes. And it's quite heart rendering, the idea that Jigsaw is 14, because obviously that's very precious.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, yes. Very much so. She has a lot of, a lot of things going wrong with her at the moment, but she still keeps on kicking, and she's been with us a long time now, so very, very precious. Don't get me going, because I'll start crying. I've turned into a huge mush as I get older. I can be brought to tears very easily.
Bless you. So now, two things that never fail to, squirrels, grab your attention, irrespective of anything else. Yes. And I'm inspired by that being about a dog too. So you can say it's what never fails to grab Jigsaw's attention.
Yes.
Squirrels.
Well, treats. Yeah. Cats, squirrels. Squirrels definitely catch your attention. Yeah. For me, I've got to say historic buildings. I love historic buildings. I used to work for the National Trust at one time. That was how I kind of changed my career, going from private industry to working in a charity. Wherever I go, if I see an old building, especially an old cinema, because that combines the two loves, an old Art Deco cinema, rubbing my hands together.
You've got a very nice Art Deco accoutrement behind you, I notice. Is that an old microphone?
That belongs to Russell. That's it's an old opera radio from 1925, I think. It's a speaker, essentially. And there's a couple, I've got two or three in it's very, very Laurel and Hardy. Russell had a collection of them. And he said to me one day, he said, my wife doesn't want me to have these in the house anymore, and I can't get rid of them. But could you look after them? So now I've taken them on.
You're the curator.
Now my wife's thinking, there's a lot of these things hanging around. it's a pleasure to have them around because I love them. Anything from the period is just it's exquisite.
A man still born out of your time, but we like you for that. Wonderful.
Absolutely right.
Okay, second squirrel.
Second squirrel is a bookshop. Oh, I can't go past a bookshop. And which is odd, I have to go in a bookshop. I can seem to be able to sniff them out wherever I go. Secondhand especially, because you never know what you'll find in a secondhand bookshop. But I've got very niche interests, so I rarely come out with a book, which is annoying because my wife always does. I'm the one dragging us in, and she always comes out with books. So I'm always looking for, books on Laurel and Hardy or the Marx Brothers, Harold Lloyd, the English Civil War, or Charles Dickens, something like that. I love it. Those are my big sort of passions. I rarely come out with one. I just can't walk past one without going in. So a bookshop is a definite one. And if it's got stationery in, stationery. I love a bit of stationery. Stan Laurel was a big fan of stationery shops.
Oh, yes. That's music to my soul because I love stationery too, and so does my son Stan. What are you going to do?
There we go.
And now,
must
a
be
quote.
The potential in stationery. It's dormant, yes. But what can we make with it? It's great.
An empty page, rather, brimming and charged with potential where anything is possible. Love that. Mm-hmm. And now, a quirky, unusual fact about you, Patrick Vasey. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
I'm going to go with I'm not anymore, but I was an archer. I was one of the bowmen of Caradoc for a short while until COVID.
Errol Flynn, please. That's very
yes, exactly. Yeah.
Men in tights.
Robin Hood fan in the day. Robin of Sherwood on television. I don't know if you remember the series Robin of Sherwood. I loved Robin of Sherwood. And I had to eventually scratch that itch of having giving archery a good go. But when you first start learning archery, you have to train with these horrible sort of compound bows with these little sights on them that you have to twiddle, and it's just cheating as far as I'm concerned. So I had to do the English longbow, and I found this club not far from me that just did traditional English longbow archery, and I just loved it, absolutely loved it. So I managed to get myself a bow, and that's
so you're a frustrated man in tights as well, because you want to be Errol Flynn with an English longbow.
Well, you can't
longbow.
See me at the waist down, so I mean I might be sitting here in my tights, but I won't divulge that.
That's a great, great fact. So we've shaken your tree. Hurrah! Now we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. Next, we talk about alchemy and gold. So when you're at purpose and in flow, Patrick Vasey, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Oh, well, I'm doing it now. Talking about Laurel and Hardy, it has to be up there. and it's funny because that's not, prior to podcasting, it would be, that feeling that when you talk about being in flow is when I've been drawing cartoons and you're getting it right and you think, this is just the best. And it's the best feeling in the world when your creative juices are going and you can't match that. Nowadays it is when I'm talking to somebody like Randy Skretvedt or Richard Bann or Glenn Mitchell. These
what a name, Skretvedt. We talked about that before we started.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Randy Skretvedt.
And just talking to them about Laurel and Hardy and listening to them. And quite often I'll forget that I'm supposed to be an interviewer and I'm just absorbed as a listener, loving the stories. Because a lot of these guys met Stan and Babe's contemporaries and people they worked with. So getting these sort of firsthand accounts of what it was like to work.
Would that be the likes of people like Jerry Lewis, who obviously held Stan Laurel in very high?
Not so much Jerry Lewis. I'm not a Jerry Lewis fan, actually. He was on a documentary once talking about them, and he talked an absolute load of codswallop. But I know people who do like Jerry Lewis, so I won't run him down too much. Just people like the editors and the cameramen and the people and some of the co-stars like Anita Garvin. They met a lot of people like that back in the sort of 60s, 70s. And they interviewed them, which is so important. Mm. There is so much that we know today about the world of Laurel and Hardy that is thanks to the work of Randy and Richard. A number of others who actually took the time to seek out these people who are still surviving and get them to talk and record them, often on audio tape, which is nice, so we can still hear their voices. And I try to use those in the podcast as much as I can do. I forgot where we're going on this one now. I've gone.
No, I got sucked into just listening. You've made me think about that. There's a story that I heard that you may be able to qualify for me, that Laurel and Hardy met about 12 years before they eventually became a double act. And there was some accident to do with, there was some sort of burning that happened with an oven that meant.
Yes. I know where you're going with this. Yeah. So basically the first meeting was on the set of The Lucky Dog in 1921. And then eventually circumstances happened that they both found themselves at the Hal Roach Studios working for the same studio, but just as kind of stock actors. Stan was under contract to Joe Rock, another film producer. He'd made all the films in his contract, but he was still under contract and wasn't allowed to appear in front of the cameras. So he was at Hal Roach Studios, but he was behind the camera directing and writing and making up gags and stuff. Oliver Hardy was supposed to be in a particular film. And on the Friday night before they were supposed to start filming on the Monday, he was cooking a leg of lamb. He loved to cook, apparently. And he took this leg of lamb out and the hot fat spilt all over his arm and causing quite severe burns. So he wasn't able to be in the film. So Hal Roach told Stan, right, you go in and you take the place of Oliver Hardy. So that's kind of, it's in Laurel and Hardy lore now that is one of the first kind of comings together of them where Stan took over from Babe. So yeah,
wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing that too. Okay, now I'm going to award you with a cake. Hurrah! So do you like cake, Patrick?
I'm not a huge fan of cake.
Tough
I prefer
crowd.
A pastry, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
So you get to put a cherry on the cake now. It's the final suffused with storytelling metaphor.
Lovely.
Thing. So you get to put a cherry on the cake now. What's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you sucker and always pulled you towards your future?
There's lots of quotes. But the one that really drives me now, because I'm so busy, is get your ass in the chair. It's as simple as that. It's
love that.
I think it's a self-publishing podcast, I think. By Joanna Penn. I think that's where I heard it. And she just says, you know, she has a, just get your ass in the chair. You know, I'm trying to write three books, Laurel and Hardy, Silence, Shorts and Features, have the podcast to do, the magazine to edit. And that's on top of a full-time job and a family.
Yes.
So when all the family is in bed and finally settled, and I think, right,
settle.
Now is my time to work, yes. I might sit down with a cup of tea and think, oh, I'll just watch Match of the Day. Or something like that. And then I think, no, get your ass in the chair. And it,
yes.
You know, because it's not going to happen. If you don't get your ass in the chair and do the work, it's not going to happen. So,
and I commend you to the house for that. That I'm about 200 episodes in and nobody has given me that mantra. Get your ass in the chair. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now with the gift of hindsight, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
The best piece of advice, and I can't remember where it came from, is... there are no have-tos in the world. There are only choose-tos. So if you, for instance, and I say this to the kids, you don't have to go to school, but you've got to be happy with the consequences if you don't. So, you know, I don't have to go to work, but if I don't, I don't get any money. So therefore I have to live on the street. And if I'm happy with that, that's fine. I don't go to work, but I don't want to live like that. So I choose to go to work. And once you take that stance that you choose to do this thing that you're not really fond of, it becomes a lot easier to do.
Lovely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, absolutely categorically does. Love that.
Like taking ownership, I suppose, of it. And it's a choose to, you do things on a choose to, have to, love to basis.
That resonates really well with the, it's always the action towards that bring about progress and change.
Yeah.
You know,
the
difference in life between what you want and what you get is what you do. It's the action and the choice.
Yeah. That's right. And you're only going to make yourself miserable if you think, well, I've got to do, I have to do this. This is just awful. I'll begrudgingly do it. Well, don't do it, but face the consequences and shut up.
Yes.
You know.
And what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself? Again, this is the second question about the gift of hindsight.
I think just be brave and do it. Just be brave and do it. You know, you can do it. I think the confidence is such a huge thing when you're growing up. And it stops you from doing so much that you could possibly do. And, you know, if anything, this podcast, this whole sort of Laurel and Hardy journey, to use that horrible phrase, has taught me is that you can do anything. It doesn't matter if you're not connected with the right people yet. The internet is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And you can get in touch with people so easily nowadays.
Yes.
And The answer is no until you ask the question.
I absolutely swear by that. Yes, until you ask the question, the answer is always going to be no. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So just be brave and do it. Just get on with it and do it.
And now we're ramping up finally to a bit of Shakespeare in a moment. But just before we get there, penultimately, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to now you've experienced this from within in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
Right. Do you go international with this?
I absolutely do. Strangely good. Available for international.
Good. OK, because I'm going to pass the golden baton on, and I have checked with this person that they're happy to do it. I mentioned the Marx Brothers Council podcast previously, which was a huge inspiration. And one of the guys on the podcast is named Noah Diamond.
And great name.
He is a great name, and but he's a great guy. He is a really, really... I don't know him personally. I've messaged him backwards and forwards. He listens to my podcast, and we have a sort of a mutual appreciation for what we do. But Noah just speaks to me. He's a very creative guy. He's a hugely intelligent guy. And I think he would be a great guest for this. And I'd love to listen to that episode as well, because I just, I'd like to know what makes him tick. So I messaged him to say, would you be happy to have a baton passed to you on this one? And he said, yeah, it'd be great. So he would be a great guest.
And that's a wonderful gift, which I thank you sincerely for. So that's Noah Diamond. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world of stage and all the bedded women, merely players, we're going to talk about legacy now. We've been deliciously talking about the legacy to be preserved forever of Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy. But now this is your moment in the sunshine. How, when all is said and done, Patrick Vasey, would you most like to be remembered?
Oh, that reminds me of Upstart Crow. I love Upstart Crow. let me think. Well, I think it's a very boring answer, but and I know a lot of your guests probably say the same. It's just to be remembered as a good person, a decent person, somebody who cared, somebody who loved, and a good father and a good husband. I think is I can't ask for more than that, really. I think my job has been done if I manage to be remembered that way. If I can be associated with the legacy of Laurel and Hardy in some small, tiny way, then my job has been done, and I will have a smile on my face in my grave. But just to be a good, decent person who cared.
Where can we find out all about Patrick Vasey and all the wonderful stuff that you're up to with the Laurel and Hardy podcast on the old hinterweb, please?
The easiest place to find everything that I'm doing on Laurel and Hardy is my website, which is laurelandhardyfilms.com. That's so the podcast is on there, the magazine is on there, and the books will be on there as soon as they're done. Laurelandhardyfilms.com. You can find the podcast on any podcast provider. It's also on YouTube as well. But you can listen very easily from the laurelandhardyfilms.com website.
Lovely. And my sincere hope to you as well, because I also, we're doing it as a LinkedIn Live, but I also pull you into the UK Health Radio show that this also goes into. And that's a global audience reach across 54 countries of 1.4 million people and growing. Christ. And so I sincerely hope that gives you lots of juicy traction as well.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I looked for you when I was at the Slapstick Festival. And my big regret is I haven't yet met you in person, but I would sincerely like to do that someday.
Oh, indeed. Well, I'll be down at Slapstick again, I'm sure. So, fingers crossed. I'd like to do, I was chatting actually with the producer of Slapstick about doing a live podcast from there, which I think you've done yourself, which would be great. So maybe one of these days we could do that.
Wonderful. I'll do a postscript film with you just about something else I want to ask you about Laurel and Hardy in a second. But ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Patrick Vasey from the Laurel and Hardy podcast. As this has been your moment in the sunshine, Patrick Vasey in the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Be the change you wish to see in the world. That's about it. That was one of my other quotes, but that was too kind of, it was too obvious. But no, just keep laughing. Just keep laughing. That is the best. It is the best medicine. And if you're not sure what to laugh to, just put some Laurel and Hardy on. You can't fail. You cannot fail.
And a lovely bit of Mahatma Gandhi in there as well. Lovely jubbly. So thank you so much. If you too would like to be on the show, check out thegoodlistening2show.com. And I've been Chris Grimes. This has been Patrick Vasey. Thank you very much indeed also for watching on LinkedIn. And good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.
So, Patrick Vase, you've just been given a damn good listening to. Could I get your immediate feedback on what that was like for you to be in this curated structure?
It was lovely, actually. I was hesitant at first because it's unusual for me to talk about myself in that way, especially on a kind of a public platform. But it was nice. It's nice to reflect sometimes. It's a very busy world at times, and it's sometimes difficult to stop and reflect.
Yes.
So to have a point where someone has made you do that has been quite refreshing. So it's been lovely. And just to talk about Laurel and Hardy is always a treat. So
yes.
Thank you for that.
And I just wanted to riff with you a little bit about Laurel and Hardy's Bratz, because what I got so enamoured by that film, which I discovered many, many years later after seeing County Hospital and, blah, blah, and Just on the Path, when I formed my comedy improvisation company, which I co-run in Bristol and have done for the last 30 years with a wonderful woman called Stephanie Weston. She's my sort of comic foil on stage in this company called Instant Wit. Instant Wit, Instant Whip has a bit of a pun, but we originally, our first photographs were to be transposed into a bowl of blancmange. In miniature. And I know that I was inspired onto a sort of gingham tablecloth. Our first photograph, I was inspired by Laurel and Hardy's Bratz because of being transposed miniature. Yes. And of course, back in their day, they would have made huge props.
Yes.
Whereas, of course, we had the gift of modern technology and we just had to just get somebody to be able to just Photoshop it. But I just was so struck with, you know, Laurel and Hardy's Bratz is brilliant because they've got this, it's just such a beautiful mindscape playground of big, huge props.
The set design is true. In fact, the Halroach Studios, the set designs are phenomenal. For a small studio on very little money, especially in the days before they were with MGM as their distributor, when they were with Pathé, they had very little money. But the set designers were phenomenally gifted. They look like real expensive feature films, some of them.
Yes.
But the Bratz set is just phenomenal. And the oversized furniture, it's kind of comic in its own way because the scale is totally wrong. I mean, you see this tiny little thin boy sitting on this massive chair. But it's such fun. It's really, really good. Yeah, it's an excellent, my favorite bit in that film. It's one of my favourite bits of all the films is when Ollie steps on the roller skate at the top of the stairs and slides down them with the legs sticking up by his head. So good. So, so good.
I'm completely there. And there's another favourite moment in a quite a random snippet where they're having an argument with a neighbour several flights up. And then Oliver Hardy kicks the ball downstairs. Yes. And then it's just a bloke on reception who says, 8:30. And just at that moment, tonk, the rugby ball or the go long American football slaps him in the face. And he's got this extraordinary lock of hair anyway, we could talk for hours. I know that. So I'd love to meet you someday because
I often do. As you can see from my podcast.
But thank you so much for saying yes, as you did as well. And this is just fantastic. And thank you for being here.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And I'll let you know when it all goes live. And as I say, it'll come in. I'm going to bring you into the UK Health Radio show space as well. And it's been my great delight to sort of, the legacy life reflection seemed like a really good fit because your whole endeavour is to preserve the legacy.
Oh, definitely. And no, that's been great. Thank you for the opportunity.